The longer I live and the more that I do the work that I do to preach and teach in all sorts of ways and forms, trying to provide people tools to not only to be saved, to become a Christian, but to grow spiritually and to become the very most that they can become personally and as a Christian, as a human being, to make the most of God's image in us and to make the most of God's Spirit in those of us who are Christians. The longer I do that, the more that it becomes abundantly clear that there are exactly two kinds of people in the world. And that is people who are willing to accept responsibility for their spiritual growth and spiritual condition, and those who aren't. There are those who are willing to accept that it is their responsibility to see to their spiritual growth, and that if they are not where they ought to be spiritually, they are responsible for doing what it takes to fix that and to grow with that. But then there's the other kind of person. And you can always tell when the other kind of person is that kind of person, because as you begin to provide or try to provide knowledge or tools and try to help people in spiritual growth or personal growth, they immediately begin to start talking and telling you why they can't do that, how they've tried it and it failed, how it never works, why it can't work, and why it's somebody else's fault, why their parents or their spouse or their kids or their church or the government or their neighbors or their job, why it's their fault, and why they can't do it, and why it will never work. Those are the two kinds of people. The people who say, yes, I understand that my spiritual condition is my responsibility, and if it's going to get better, it will be because I work at it. And there are those who will not accept responsibility. How do we do that? How do we, having accepted responsibility, how do we work on it? How do we grow spiritually? How do we grow into what Paul said in Ephesians 4, the fullness of the measure of Christ? How do we become filled up with all the fullness of God, as he said in Ephesians 3? Well, a couple of things I would suggest. One of them is your daily habits, your daily practices, your Bible study habit, prayer habit. We'll talk more about this later, Lord willing. But your spiritual habits, the way that you live your life day to day, your commitment to obedience, your commitment to do the will of God, your relationships, the words that you say, the things that you think. It's a big part of it, probably the biggest part of it. But another part of that is church. And even though, as we have said, and after today, I won't say this again until the next time I say it, 2 hours a week. I know you're getting tired of that. But it's just amazing to me that 2 hours a week is what we spend here, and yet how important is this to us? How important is what we do in the assembly, in church? It's vital. This is such a huge part of our personal and spiritual growth. What happens here has such an impact. And maybe we find that it's not having much of an impact. Maybe we find that we go to church. First of all, if you don't go, you can't expect any impact. We need to be here, or it can't do anything. But if you go and you find that it doesn't have the impact, you don't get much out of it, it doesn't provide you what you need, whose responsibility is that? Just, I would suggest to you that, while yes, the elders of this congregation who you just saw a moment ago, they bear the biggest responsibility in making this what it's supposed to be. And for my part, it's a heavy responsibility to do this the way it's supposed to be done. Those who lead prayer, those who do the Lord's Supper, those who lead singing. But it's everybody's obligation. When I go to church, it is my responsibility to do everything I can do to get the most out of what's being done. And short of it being an unbiblical, unscriptural, God-denying event, there's something to get. If the Bible's being taught, and scriptural prayers are being prayed, and scriptural songs are being sung, and fellowship is being had, there's something to get. And it's up to each of us to get it. And that's kind of been the foundation of what we've been talking about. To get the most out of church, we, all of us, must be putting everything we can into our faith every day. You simply cannot pour yourself into your faith every day and show up to a church service and just get nothing out of it. You can't. There's no way. Because you're living it and pouring into it and focusing on it day to day. To put it another way, what we Christians want is for church to impact life. You want this to matter in your daily life. But it's how we do life that determines the impact of church. Like the student who never studies, or the athlete who never practices. When it's class time and game time, nothing's going to happen. The same thing is true about church. And we see this. What I'm telling you is biblical truth. The passages that talk about church are settled in surrounding passages that talk about living daily life. That's when we get the most out of it. So what we're talking about in this particular sermon to finish up the series is how to get the most out of a sermon. And it's my suggestion that no person will have any trouble getting something out of a Bible-based sermon, which is what we do here, that you will have no trouble engaging with the sermon on Sunday if you're engaging with the Bible all week. When the Bible is being taught, if you're in the Bible through the week, the sermon will interest you to varying degrees. Will it be dull sometimes? Of course, sometimes you'll have a guest speaker. There's no question about that. It'll be dull. The preacher will be off his game, tired, distracted. It happens. Sometimes it'll just be weak. You just walk away going, do better than that. Sure. But when you're daily engaging with the Bible, the sermon is going to interest you. Remember that we're not going to be interested in a 40-minute talk on the Bible just because we're supposed to be. A 40-minute talk on the Bible will only interest you if what? If you're interested in the Bible. It's the only way that works. And so, this is a little bit of review, just quickly. The sermon is a two-person experience. The sermon is a two-person experience. All of the work doesn't happen up here. A sermon is a two-person experience. It's me and you working together to get the most out of it. Right? In the parable of the soils, there wasn't just a sower. There was a sower and what? There were soils. And the soils had to be the right kind of soil for the sower to do any good. What it demands, this thing that we do at this time, is active participation. You're not a passive consumer. You're not merely a listener. You are an active participant in what's going on. Again, what you expect of me, what you should fairly expect of me, that this is not the only time I think about the Bible. That when I get up here, this is not the only time I think about the Bible. You expect me to be thinking about it all the time. You expect me to be prepared when I get up here. Not to stand up here and go, you know, I just didn't have time this week. Let me see what I can come up with real quick. You expect better than that. You expect me to be fully engaged, not distracted, not bored, not lacking energy, not with my mind off somewhere else. Well, what do you expect of yourself? Should it not be the same thing? That you're interested in the Bible day to day, that you prepare yourself to come here on Sunday morning, that you are fully engaged, that you're bringing your energy and you're bringing your focus. And I will tell you that there are a precious few preachers who are so good that they could stand up here and hold your interest without any effort on your part. There are some, and I've heard them, and they're fantastic, but there aren't many. There are very few preachers who are so good that you don't have to make the effort. You're going to have to engage and keep your mind focused throughout the exercise. And so, you know, do you want better preaching? Who doesn't? Who doesn't want better preaching? I love the true story. There was a preacher in a church out in California who had been at that church for 40 years. Same guy, same church, 40 years. And some of the members came to him and said, you know, you've been here 40 years. We think we'd probably like to hear somebody else preach. He said, I hate to hear that. Where are y'all moving? Well, who doesn't want better preaching? But it's not just up to the preacher. Do I need to get better? Absolutely. Do I need to grow? 100%. Do I need to work at it? All the time. But you also can help preaching to be better by being a better Bible student. When you are a better Bible student, preaching will automatically get better for you. Automatically. When you are a better listener, when you listen, and I'm not saying you're bad listeners. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that to whatever degree we can improve our listening. Right? How do you think it affects the preacher and thus the sermon if people don't seem to be listening? And then I'm not asking you to do anything for me or it's not about that. This is a practical point. How difficult do you think it is to try to talk to people who aren't listening? It makes it very challenging, right? So then the preacher is thinking about that. He's brought down by that, dragged down by that. He's not doing as well. And so then it just goes downhill from there, right? Being a great listener, being a great engager in the sermon and afterwards. So today, what we're going to learn about, several things. Number one, we're just going to hit Christian Life 168. What is 168? Why 168? That's what? How many hours in a week? So we're talking about living the Christian life, not just 2 hours on Sunday, but 168 hours a week. What does that look like? And why does it matter? How do we prepare for church? What can you do to get ready to come to church and get more out of it? What can you do while listening to the sermon to get more out of the sermon? And how can you use the sermon after you have received it? Okay? So what are we talking about living a Christian life all week long? We're just talking about consistent spiritual habits. And I think there are just four. It's very simple. There are four basic spiritual habits that we must engage in to just have a baseline of faithfulness, not to mention growth. And they are these: Bible study, with an emphasis on meditating, but thinking about what you read after you read it. Okay? Not just reading it and putting it, you don't think about it anymore. Studying it, reading it, and then thinking about it throughout the day. That's biblical meditation. Secondly, prayer with an emphasis on gratitude. Prayer with an emphasis on gratitude. If you want to 10x your spiritual growth, increase your prayer and make an emphasis on gratitude. It's no accident that when the Bible talks about prayer, it almost always talks about gratitude. Number three, obeying what you have learned and confessing it when you don't. committing to obedience, but you're not always going to do it, so confess it when you don't and move on. And then fourthly, fellowship with other Christians, and with an emphasis on service. Spending time with other Christians and being sure that you're engaged in service. Those are the four areas of consistent spiritual practice that are essential. In fact, there's nothing else you can do as a Christian that doesn't fit in there somewhere. It's all in there. Okay? So here's just a suggestion. So what do we do with that? Here's a suggestion. Take that list, those eight things, and grade yourself from 1 to 5. 1, I'm horrible at. 5, I couldn't be any better at. Grade yourself on each one of those 8 things. How do I do on this day to day? Well, then see what needs to be worked on. I'm a 5 at Bible study and a 1 on gratitude. I need to work on gratitude. Right, prioritize that. Make a plan for how you're going to do it. How am I going to do it? What am I going to do exactly? And then put it on your calendar. I'm going to pray a prayer of gratitude at this time every day. I'm going to study the Bible at this time every day. I'm going to perform an act of service at this time on this day every week. Like, if we don't do that, it's just all vague thoughts. I need to do better. But now we're planning it, and we're putting it into practice, and then do something with it. Just a suggestion as to how we might be able to increase how we're doing on those things. Now, when it comes to church specifically, how we prepare for church, well, let me just say this. I believe this to be true. How we prepare for anything reveals how we truly value that thing. How we prepare for anything reveals how we value that thing. I hope that the way you would prepare to bring home a house plant would be very different from the way you prepare to bring home a newborn baby. I would hope. But you see a plant you want at the store, it looks good, you buy it, you come home, you throw it in the corner. I hope you didn't do that with your baby. We didn't with the first two. With the third one, I mean, you know how it is with the first one. Got to have the color just right, the crib just right, not too wide on the slats. The big head can get through there. You want a mobile, but you got to be got a safe one. You can't have the cord of the shade hanging down into the crib. All right, you get the little socket protectors for a newborn, because you don't want a newborn sticking his finger in the socket. And we get those things that we put on the corners of all the sharp, you know, the sharp corners. But bringing home a houseplant is entirely different from bringing home a newborn baby, because we value the baby a lot, and so we prepare a lot. If you value something, you will make preparation for it, and that includes church. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24 and 25 is more than the beat people over the head so they come to church more often verse. It also says this, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. There is some consideration that needs to go into church if church is to happen correctly. How do we prepare for church? And I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm about to stop preaching and start meddling. I just want you to know that. I'm going to get in your business. I understand you're free to do whatever you want to do. I know that. But I just want to alert you. I'm about to start being nosy, just so you know. So, the night before church. What should the night before church look like? Well, surely we can engage in some sort of preparation, some sort of thinking, some sort of focusing, right? Maybe the preacher's given us a passage he's going to talk about, or we know what the Bible class is going to be about. We can kind of start thinking about that. Maybe think about who's going to be there and what they might need. Maybe think about if I have a role, not if I'm supposed to be doing something, kind of thinking about getting. I'm not talking about fasting half the day and wearing, you know, sackcloth and sitting in a dark closet. I'm just talking about a little bit of thought about what's coming up the next morning. What about sleep? You know, would you send your child to school to take a test on the amount of sleep that you get on Saturday night? If your child had a championship game the next day, would you send them to the game on the amount of sleep that you get before church? I know it's Saturday night. I know it's the weekend. But you got church the next day. And if church matters, it's really hard to hang in there. Hard to stay awake. Hard to stay focused if you didn't get enough sleep. Just a suggestion. What about the morning of? The morning of church. What are you eating? What are you eating? Now, this is different for different people. I fast from the time I go to bed until lunch the next day. So for me, not eating works better. If I eat, I feel bad. Maybe you have a particular diet or whatever. You don't want to eat too much. You don't want to eat too whatever. But the way that you eat the morning of church is going to affect how church is for you. It just is. Right? Family dynamics. One morning, when we were still living in Kentucky, Tracy and I got up and were getting ready for church. And I don't know what happened, but we had an absolute blow-up of an argument. It was bad. And we used to fight a lot back then. It wasn't unusual. But listen, I don't want you to think badly of anybody. She finally grew out of it, and she's doing much better. So we had this crazy bad argument. So we, you know, get ourselves together enough to get in the car and go to church. We walk into church, or before we even walked in, we pulled in the parking lot. The parking lot was full, and it usually wasn't. And so we started worrying about, so then we walk in, and as soon as we walk in, Bible class is going on, and we realize we had forgotten to set our clock the night before, and we had missed Bible class. And so not only did we have this humongous blowout before we left, we missed Bible class. I was completely flustered, or as people in Kentucky insist on saying, frustrated. I was completely flustered. My mind was blown, and I could barely preach. We got home that afternoon, and I said, listen, we can fight like cats and dogs Monday to Saturday. Could we avoid fighting on Sunday morning? Just if we just can't, as soon as we get home, if you want to pounce, go ahead. But it's just not before church, right? You know that this is true. The family dynamic that you have before church is going to affect church. If y'all are fighting, if you're, you know, you're hassled, you're hectic, you know it's going to make a difference. So try to keep things calm. Again, preparing our hearts, thinking about what it is that we're about to be doing. I debated about whether to even talk about this or not. But just a couple of time considerations, right? If you get up late and it's hectic and you're hassled, what's going to happen? It's really hard to get settled back down. If you tend to be late, if we had anybody like that, it's just something to think about, right? Maybe getting a little bit ahead of time. Maybe it's just you can be a little more calm and get a little more out of it. And now I'm going to move on before I get in real trouble. So the sermon itself, where should you sit? I know what you're thinking. I'm going to sit where my pew is. And I'm not going to sit anywhere but in my pew, and you can't make me move. I get that. In over 30 years of preaching, there has never been anything I have ever talked about that I was more confident would do no good than this point right here. I understand. that you're going to sit where you sit. That's fine. Just a couple of things to think about. Okay? So, first of all, the farther back you sit, the more distracted you'll be. That's just a fact. Okay? Now, I'm not calling people out, whatever. It's just distracting. But what I think, what we ought to do as a congregation, I think, is leave the back, at least the back row, for people with small children, older people, and that sort of thing, for visitors, right? No visitor wants to come in late with a full auditorium and have to come sit down there. Visitors hate that. I hate it. And I've been going to church forever. We don't want to make them do that. So, there are people who need to sit in the back, and they should sit in the back. Other than that, the farther back you sit, the more distracted you are, and some people don't have a chance to sit where they need to sit. Just going to leave it there and never talk about it again. Should you follow along in the Bible? Of course, in the Church of Christ, the answer is always, absolutely. And if you don't, you're committing a sin. I think it's a little more nuanced than that. First of all, I would discourage following along on an electronic device. I think that's not optimal, in my opinion. It's not optimal. You get notifications and that kind of thing. It's easy to be distracted. This is my opinion. But should you follow along in the Bible? It depends. If you can follow along in the Bible and stay focused, you should. But some people can't. Right? Some maybe newer Christians. They don't know the Bible very well. So what happens? The preacher says, turn to Exodus 15, and by the time they get to Exodus 15, the preacher's on the invitation. Well, don't do it then. Don't follow along. Just make a notation and look at it later. That you don't have to follow along. I have a friend of mine who used to preach, and he was proud of this. He said, I'm going to go to so many scriptures tonight, you're going to flip the pages of your Bible so much, you're going to get a head cold. That's what he liked to do. I don't like to do that. To me, it's hard to keep up. If you have trouble keeping up, don't do it. Nothing wrong with that. But I think that one thing that everyone should consider is taking notes. The one thing that will keep you focused more than anything else is taking notes. Hands down. Taking notes keeps you focused. It helps keep your attention on what's going on, and even if you never look at them again, it will help you remember what was said, even if you never see it again. And my daughter, the other day I was talking to her, she's a diligent note taker in church, and I'm very proud of that. And she said the other day, we were talking about this, and she said, you know, the reason I take notes is because it helps me pay attention. Here's what she said. She said, the reason I take notes is because it helps me pay attention. She said, I know I should be past that by now. No. Nobody gets past that. Nobody ever gets past that. Nobody ever gets past the need to have something that they're actively working on to stay engaged. It's not a sign of immaturity. It's a sign of maturity to do what it takes to hang in there. So taking notes, I think, is everybody should consider that. Guarding our focus. Where should your focus be? Where should your focus be? Not on whether the preacher has matching clothes or not. If I'm here, he does. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to examine the outfit. It matches every time. So you just put that out of your mind. All right? Is something wrong with the preacher's hair? It's not going to be. As long as I'm here, you can forget that. Are the socks interesting? Every time. Don't worry about that. Right, but seriously, sometimes our focus is on maybe he's got an annoying tick, or maybe we don't like the way he looks, or maybe we don't like the way he says something, or there's just something. This is what some of the people who were attacking Paul were doing. They were attacking the way he preached, not his content, but the way he preached. This is going to distract you. It's my job to be as undistracting as possible. It's your job to ignore it when I'm not. Should not be on other people. Your focus should not be on who needs this. Your focus should not be on the person down the pew, or your in-laws, or my in-laws, or somebody else. I tried out at a place one time, little tiny church in Kentucky. I tried out. I was preaching. And there was a guy, one of the kind of the leading members, was there with it. He was there with his wife and his daughter and her boyfriend. And that boyfriend must have been a scoundrel. Because everything I said, this guy would lean way over and he would look down at the future son-in-law and he would nod his head so fast I thought he was going to break his neck. And he'd make eye contact and the whole time, looked like a bobblehead. So this guy, he was not getting anything out of the sermon for him because all he could think about was what? He needs it. We do that all the time. Don't think about that. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about the message and how it applies to who? You and you alone. Right? Recently, I had this appointment with the doctor about my hearing. And so we had the hearing test, and then he gave me the results, and then we went for the hearing aid and all that stuff. I can assure you that the entire time that I was talking to the doctor and then to the audiologist, I was not picking apart their delivery or their performance or their clothing. And I was not sitting there thinking about all the other deaf people in the world who needed to hear it. The doctor and the audiologist had a solution to my problem. I had a big problem. They had the answer to it. While they're talking, I'm applying what they're saying to who? To me. Because they had what I need. And that's what's supposed to happen in the sermon. You have a need of some kind. And the sermon is going to address and help that need. So, moving on as quickly as I can. What is the purpose of a sermon? It's not box checking. We had the prayer, we had the announcements, we had the singing, we had the Lord's Supper, had the sermon, now we can move on. It's not that. It's not entertainment. It's not entertainment. This is, I think, this is one of the biggest challenges of hanging in there with a sermon. We want it to be entertaining. And if it's not, it's not good enough. It's a big problem. I remember when I was a kid, I was very young, and I was asked to preach one day at a church in Indiana, in the central part of Indiana. And so when I worked like a dog on this sermon. I worked hard on this sermon. And so I went up and I preached it. I had illustrations, the best illustrations you ever heard. It was funny, it was sad, it was everything. So I preached the sermon, it was awesome. There was an older lady standing, or I was standing at the back where you have to stand as a preacher. I was standing at the back, and this older woman came through, and she didn't say anything other than this. She said to me, "You are a great entertainer." And then she left. Now, I was a kid. I was dumb. And I thought, that's a great compliment. She just gave me a great compliment. I did an awesome job. And then I grew up a little bit, and I thought later about that, and I thought she was not complimenting what I did at all. She was very subtly, kindly telling me that I had all the wrong focus, that I was doing it wrong, and I needed to fix that. The sermon is not about entertainment. It's not about having a good time. It's about something else, not about information. This is important. It's not just about information. This is not just about telling you something. You know what the unbelievable thing about the world we live in is? You can learn anything you want to learn without ever going to church or any other place at all. You can look it up on YouTube. There's nothing I can tell you that you can't learn somewhere else. It's not about information, and it's not about this is where you get all your Bible teaching. It's not about that. The sermon is one element, one small element of a fully formed spiritual practice. The point of the sermon is simply to produce positive change. If I do not preach something that helps you change, and if you do not take what is preached and use it for change, this was a failure. The sermon is to produce positive change. That's what it's for. So, after the sermon, a couple of things. I'm not going to get into all this. Let me just skip to this, blah, blah, blah. You don't need to know that. Just to mention a couple of things, and then we'll be done. First of all, make some adjustments because of some things. So, the sermon series this month, beginning next Sunday, Lord willing, the events in Jesus' life. Next week, Lord willing, we will talk about Mark 1, 14 and 15 as we begin to think about some important events in Jesus' life. Tonight, we will discuss the question, will God ever give up on me? If I go off in sin, if I reject God, if I leave Him, if I become unfaithful, is it possible that God would ever give up on me? There's more to it than you might think. And so we'll talk about that, Lord willing, tonight. So, after the sermon, what we need to do is simply this. Take away a point and make an application. What do we do with what we've talked about? Here's the point. If you want to get more out of the sermon, do more Bible reading. If you want the sermon to be better, read the Bible more. And it will be. What's the application? Read the Bible. This week, read the Bible. If you do not have a daily Bible study habit, read the Bible 15 minutes a day. 15 minutes. If you're already reading the Bible and you have a habit, add 5 minutes to it. That's it. Right? So we're just taking a point out of it, applying it, and going with it. That's what's supposed to happen with a sermon. So, take out your song book and turn to the invitation song and we'll sing that. Ray, what was the number again? 545. Number 545. We'll sing that song in just a moment. Number 545. Every person is responsible for their spiritual condition. Every person. All of us have challenges spiritually because of things we cannot help. Some of us were raised spiritually, very poorly. Some of us did not have Christian parents, Christian homes, and church families. That's a huge challenge. Some of us have been mistreated by people who claim to be Christians. Some of us have or are currently going through health problems, money problems, family problems that make it very difficult to grow spiritually. All of us have challenges. But all of us are responsible for doing what we can do to grow spiritually. What you can do may be very little compared to what somebody else can do. Maybe things are so difficult in your life you can barely get out of bed in the morning. Sometimes we have seasons like that. There's no shame in it. But there is a little bit that you can do. You can pray. Maybe you can read a little. You can allow someone to come in and help you. There's something that you can do. So whatever that is that you need to be doing, whether it's a little or it's a lot, it is your responsibility to do it. But you don't have to do it alone. We want to help you. We want to help you. We want to study with you, pray with you, listen to you, spend time with you, whatever it is that you need. But we can't do anything for you if we don't know what that is. If you have a need, please talk to us about it before you leave. You can come talk to us after church. You can get with me or one of the elders, somebody, and we'll talk privately after church. Or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.